When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's beautiful to be here with all of you today. And I know that we have a very packed event today and tomorrow. Appreciate you all hanging in there and staying with us. You know, if you got to get up and make that bathroom break, we understand. We're not going to chastise you for it. If you got on the phone, you could take it with you, you know, because I know y'all do that. I know y'all do that. It's not the most sanitary habit, but people do. So, but as we move throughout this day, keep in mind that what ATS is all about is family. What ATS is all about, helping the least among us. And that's what those goals that we've set and that Antonio holds in front of us, the old carrot and the stick. You'd much rather have the carrot than the stick, right? But it's so important to keep these things in the forefront of your mind so that they filter back into your subconscious, and they will then affect every single thing in your life, every word that comes out of your mouth and every thought. So let's be aware of that, and let's all see if we can apply some of those things. You know, for our next guest speaker is truly a consummate educator. He has a couple of different spots with us here at ATS Business University and the Bureau of Dominant Speakers, and is truly one of my favorite faculty members. Vastine East is a certified motivational speaker. He likes to help young and older adults who may be struggling with pains and doubts on their personal journeys. Vastine speaks from his personal experiences. The results of family, marriage, and life issues have initiated the opportunity for him to share the pains, the doubts, and his victories in his own personal journey. Vastine decided to take negative energy and literally transform it into a tool to help those struggling with the same issues. So without further ado, if he is ready, it is my innumerable pleasure to introduce the incredible Vastine East. Vastine, is he with us today? There he is. Hello, sir. Hello, sir.
Hello, Gary. Hope everyone is well. I'm well.
The floor is yours. Could you speak up just a tad for us, please?
Yes, I will, Gary. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
All right. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. Once again, I would like to simply say to the ATS family, and more importantly to Mr. Antonio T. Smith, Jr., it is an awesome, awesome privilege, an opportunity, something that I never envisioned 2 years ago after traveling to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to witness the Les Brown event. It was you, Antonio, that I met when I made it to the hotel that Friday night, getting ready for the event that virtually changed my life. And you was that special person, the usher, that weekend that ushered me into it has so many things that have happened in my life because meeting you in Fort Lauderdale. And I've been given the opportunity to speak on a topic Education for Radical Times. Education for Radical Times. There's a story I would like to begin by saying these words about radical times. When we define the word radical, it's an awesome word. It's a word that conjures up the most feared thing in the world, change. People are oftentimes terrified when they hear the word change.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Vastine. We still have some folks that are having a hard time hearing you. If I could just ask you to belt it out there for us. And again, sorry for the interruption.
Change. Yes, can you hear me now, Gary?
Much better, much better. Thank you.
Can you hear me now, Gary? I'm having issues with my microphone again.
Yes, yep, I've got you now. That's a lot better.
Yes, can you hear me now, Gary?
Can you hear me, sir? I can hear you. Can you hear me? There we go.
Can you hear me now, Gary?
Yep, I think we've got you much better, much better.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. As I was applauding and thanking Antonio a few moments ago as I began to speak, it is important for me to stress how thankful I am that I met him in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 2 years ago at a Les Brown seminar, a seminar that has changed my life, that has given my life more meaning, more purpose, but most of all has allowed me to begin to live my dreams. Many of my dreams have been fulfilled so far just from that encounter with Antonio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I would like to begin by giving the topic of my keynote, the topic of the things that I will be talking about for the next few minutes. The topic is education during radical times. Education for radical times. Education that is in such disarray during this radical time. And I hope that everyone can hear me now. And I apologize for the disruption at my technical end on my end here. Radical. The word radical conjures up various thoughts in one's mind. Radical conjures up radical thoughts, feelings, emotions, because it represents change. We have seen the word radical apply in all of our lives, in our families, when someone gets sick, parents divorce. Those are radical moments that represent change. The children's attitudes change as the results of parents breaking up. Radical changes that take place in education. Radical things that take place in politics. Radical things that take place between nations, between races. All of these things conjure change. It is because of change, I believe, is because of the birth of the ATS. It is because of change. It is because of the radical state that we live in, the radical nature of society, and most of all, the radical nature of what prompted Antonio from his experiences, his life story, that he wishes to share with the world. Change. And I'm fortunate, I'm very grateful to be a part of this body of change during this radical time. I would like to begin by giving you a glimpse of a story. A story of two men who didn't know each other. two men who undoubtedly, if they met on the streets in any given part of the world, any city, they probably would not have even stared at each other, wouldn't have nodded, even given a handshake. But they both were bound by a certain phenomenon that was occurring in the world, and it was called change. It was called the age of exploration. This was actually the beginning of the industrial age. Africa was very old. Europe was old. And those two continents, the European continent and the African continent, were in the process of being processed of its people, its most valuable resource, people, its labor. Many left Europe, many left Africa, all because of economics. All left Europe because Europe was in need of dire change. She was moving from kingdoms to more or less a system of more spreading out the wealth, supposedly, and Africa, being older, found itself with an overabundance of people that were readily utilized for a different form of labor in the New World. We have two men. I'll call him English Rob, and I'll call the other Senegal Joe. Both of these men came by way to the New World, whether it be North or South America or Central America. Each of these men came by way of boat, sailing vessels. One walked on his boat, or the boat that brought him to the Western world, to the New World, basically a free man. But a life of servitude he would eventually embrace once he reached these shores. That was English Rob. Senegal Joe, on the other hand, leaving the African shore, I'll call him Senegal Joe, came more or less in restraint. But the end result is that when he would reach these shores on the Western front, servitude and labor would be his call. These two men, once reaching the shores of the Western world, would find themselves on equal but yet different ends of the spectrum of labor. One was to work for nothing. One was to work more or less as one who would work the land and give so much back. But the whole result of their coming to these shores was simply because of labor. I'll leave these two men for a moment, if you'll let me, please. I used to frequent a barbershop when I was a little boy. And in this barbershop, in the back of the barbershop, there was a painting on the wall that has intrigued me all of my life. And I'm so grateful today that I can describe that photo, that it hasn't haunted me, but it has intrigued me. In this painting were two boys. They looked like Pugsley, that used to be on the television show, The Addams Family. And they sat one behind the other in this radio flyer wagon. In front of the wagon was a bulldog that was tethered to the handlebar of this wagon. And the boy who was in the front, Pugsley, we'll call him Pugsley One, they both were overweight boys, and he held in his hand a pole with a string, and suspended from that string was a bone. And these two boys, you could see the smile on their face as this dog was pulling the wagon in hopes to catch the bone. And the bone apparently would never touch his nose. But in pursuit of the bone, the dog was pulling the wagon. That was English Rob and Senegal Joe. Now, the reason why I use these two men, they represent men from all over the world, but I simply use them as a visual. In the pursuit of pulling the wagon, the two boys were enjoying a good life. In pulling the wagon, the two boys indicated by the fact that a bone was hanging from the pole that there was once meat on the bone. This is the plight that many of us are experiencing during this radical time. No longer do the fat boys in the wagon need the dog in that capacity any longer. It is because of this wonderful miracle called the ATS. That call has been answered. Many people are displaced today because they're not needed any longer. This is the first time in human history that it is incumbent upon every man that he must do for himself, think for himself, and utilize his abilities and his gifts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And talents, not to be the dog to pull the wagon any longer. It was by design. It is a natural, it's natural because the biggest enemy of poor people is ignorance and technology. You see, the problem with the two boys in the wagon, they finally woke up one day and they realized that, wait, if we utilize technology, robotics, if we utilize the technologies that we have, we can get more work from a few people using technology. Therefore, we don't have to deal with men calling in sick. We don't have to worry with people rioting or putting on displays of discourse with the company. Just the other night, I looked at the movie Hoffa. And this is what the struggle that he had with the Teamsters. He was trying to utilize all of his labor and get equal pay, equal treatment of healthcare. But the end result was things happened to his life. No one really knows what happened. But the problem that occurred during his life was this. Those at the very top of the food chain, and we can see this in history, if you love motion pictures like I do, old epic movies, where men, kings, and emperors would ride in their sedan chairs, being supported by muscular, strong men, and someone was always walking near the sedan chair with some kind of a pole with ostrich feathers cooling down the man or woman sitting on their throne. Humankind has not evolved from that particular mind state ever. Because there's one thing that each of us, we fight against. And it is called the S-U-N, even though the S-U-N gives us life. We love creature comforts. And that is one of the blessings of having money, is that you can enjoy the comforts of life. But as we see the story through English Rob and Cynical Joe, once they will no longer need it to pull the wagon, as I stated a few moments ago, they were left lost. They were left in a state that they were not prepared to overcome. And I want to say something about Cynical Joe and English Rob. Our two men of the hour. The beautiful part about these two men, they lived in a culture, they functioned in a culture that only trained them to do what was necessary to perform their particular task. There's a problem today. Young people are going to college, studying, majoring, and are increasing tremendous debt for careers that have no future. It's a funny thing when you think about those who attend college, many of them, many young students. It's amazing that young collegiate players come out of college. Their labor made a lot of money for the universities, but they're blessed not to have much debt when they come out of college. And this is why I focus so much on this topic, education during in radical times. Yes, we are in a radical period right now, where it doesn't seem that it matters how patriotic you've been. It doesn't seem to be how loyal you've been, how good you were to companies. And once they can find a way to reutilize your talents through technology, you're out the door. That is the simple fact. I spent 43 years as a civil structural designer. That was a time in an average drafting room, there might be 30 or 40 people lying belly down on drafting tables, virtually going blind, drawing objects and symbols with different colors, structural design, piping design. And all of a sudden, computers began to creep into the engineering offices. The drafting tables began to disappear. Where there was once 30 or 40 tables, it became 10 cubicles. We were using more archaic forms of drafting tools, AutoCAD or whatever. And those tools became more mechanized. Technology moved in and made those tools more powerful. Then suddenly the cubicles disappeared down to the number 10. One man was beginning to do the work of four or five men who once laid belly down on drafting tables, and eventually they became so technologically advanced into 3D design, one man is now doing the work of probably 20 people. At the same time, there are few Robs and there are few Joes in the drafting world. And here's another thing that was so puzzling as I was leaving the engineering field. A friend of mine who was studying, getting her master's in engineering or whatever, mechanical engineering, she said, what's happening is that the companies are developing a library of information that we will one day cut and paste projects. They've done so many. I worked in offshore, various projects, massive drilling rigs, petrochemical, and many of these projects are now in a library where they can virtually cut and paste. They can actually bring in a 15-year-old and do those jobs now, cut and paste. The engineering aspects of it, the more advanced part, will be involved with virtual things, the stresses and the loads and everything else that goes into building things, but the basic form of engineering is now in a library. So here I am, I'm Joe, and I have my brother Rob. We both are out now in a world of nothing. It is because of the ATS, as I have studied it over the months, I see the uniqueness of it now. I understand the basic function of what it serves. It is more than just becoming millionaires. It is virtually to save our souls. Because what good is it and your soul is empty? How do I say it saves your soul? Is because it gives you a reason to live again. back to the story, looking at the topic, education in or during radical times. But there is hope. There is hope as I look at the ATS. There is hope when I see the visions, when I have slowly come to understand. And because I'm a baby boomer, my brain doesn't change as quickly as some of the younger members of the ATS. I must say that I went through a tremendous brainwashing, but I've learned a great deal. I realized that I was lied to. I realized that the world that gave me such joy and such, I was very fortunate to come out of it unscathed, basically. But for the many that didn't escape this horror that is taking place now, because a lot of the jobs that are gone, not only because of technology, but because of the pandemic, a lot of those jobs aren't coming back. So I applaud the ATS, the ingenuity that exists within each of us, young and old. Antonio, your vision, your reawakening of the human masses, the masses of people, or giving people a chance once again, or for the first time, to truly know what it's like to be a free person. But I want to share with you some intriguing quotes. I love quotes. Outgoing Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, said just a few weeks ago, this is in relationship to many of the loans of students that are in college that are heavily in debt. I realize something has to be done, she said, and each of us must come to some terms of sympathy and understanding. Something has to be done. But she went so far as to say that in liquidating or relieving many of these debts would be tantamount to becoming socialist. I do not believe that. I believe that the most important thing about what's happening right now is that there has to be a sense of fairness as we talk about the changes that are taking place in our new economy. And that's what it's all about. It's a new economy. It's a different economy. Here's a quote I would like to share. Education is a better safeguard of liberty than a standing army. I believe that. It is better to have an educated populace than to have, it's better than a standing army, because what good is to amass all of the wealth and the power in a land and the people are disenfranchised when people have no hope, when people have no reason to have hope? That was by Edward Everett, a 19th century American statesman. And here's the second quote. Education is for improving the lives of others and for leaving your community and world better than you found it. Marion Wright Engelberg, president of the Children's Defense Fund. I personally believe that education should be virtually linked to the Department of Defense. I believe somehow that education should be tied in and so closely linked to it, rather than you constantly looking at the building of, and I love watching like the F-35, the beautiful airplanes, the military planes. But it's one thing is to take your eye off of the high end of the military spending and think about what's happening to the masses of people that are disgruntled, unhappy. That's something to think about. Education is the most powerful weapon that can be used that can change the world. When I see that the number of people that are embracing the ATS from India and Africa and other parts of the world, that is unifying, that is changing the world. It is giving people hopes that did not have perhaps hopes yesterday. And that's all anyone can really do on the first hand of helping anyone is to give them a reason to have hope. A people without hope, a people in despair, is an awful sight. In my recent travels, number of travels to various countries in Africa, it pains me to see young men and women sitting on the curbs of dilapidated sidewalks with a look of no hope, bare feet, and their clothes are tattered. It troubles me when I see them sitting there and Mercedes-Benz will go by and the only thing they have in contact with the cars are the dust that they leave on the people sitting on the curbs. One can only imagine that eventually they will rise up because they have no hope. They will rise up at a speech from someone that will encourage them to take. So this is why I believe that it is imperative that we should link education to a form of national defense. Because people will only endure and watch for so long. The children of Rob and Joe eventually will speak out. And that's the beautiful part about what I believe the ATS, Enriqueza, is giving the world: a sense of hope, a reason to hope. And what I love about the hope that I experience when I talk to members of the ATS and Enriqueza, they all have hope coming from despair, coming from pain and suffering. This is what Antonio, his vision, along with Tempest and all the rest that have spent many hours putting together this body, this wonderful platform. And this is why I'm so happy to be a part of it. So happy to be able to share in its victories, and hopefully that I will play a bigger part, a greater part. But I want to say something as I'm moving to a point where now I have to really find, I really find myself now, I'm getting more lubricated to do this, to talk about it, loosening up a little bit. After following so many great speakers this morning, ideas and thoughts, I'm so moved to say a few other words. As I think about the opportunity that exists here at the ATS, I'm going to use you, Brother Antonio, as I borrow from the good book. The good book tells us about, my favorite book, by the way, it talks about a man who went in search of pearls. He went in search to find a goodly pearl. And I want to think that in terms of what he was searching for, he found it. And looking for that pearl and looking for it, he eventually sold all that he had in order to have this pearl. But I want to back up just for a minute as I talk about this pearl. Each of us are pearls. Each of us, through all our pain, were once like a pearl inside of the shell that was dirty and sandy. Each of us have emerged or trying to emerge from those shells of pain. Even before they were finally brought to the surface of the ocean, we were at the bottom of the sea of life. I've been there. To be at the bottom of the sea of life, like our boys, Joe and Rob, they were at the bottom. They left their continents of birth. They came here. They started new lives. New lives were created for them, but yet they were still at the bottom. And what I love about what's happening at the ATS, they're not talking about just existing. they're trying to tell us through their lectures and their teachings and all of their innovative ideas that sometimes I'm slow to understand because of my slow brain, but I'm catching on. What they're doing is those who are orchestrating and leading this great body are simply trying to rinse the dirt off of us. They're simply trying to get us to come out of those shells that have encased us too long, because we've been wallowing in the muck and the mire far too long. And unlike the bulldog that was replaced by Rob and Joe, I personally feel I had pulled the wagon too long when I finally left. But back to the pearl. The man is walking around on the shore somewhere near this ocean, and he's looking for a goodly pearl. But someone went down deep swimming to find this pearl. Someone that jumped into the water, he probably was poor himself. And he swam around with poor goggles on his eyes, or no goggles at all, dealing with the salt water and nearly blinding himself to find the shell that held you and I, the great pearl. And eventually he found the pearl, the shell, and he brought it to the surface. And I see this man walking to his little hut, and he began to take a knife, and he began to pry open the shell. And there he found a pearl. He found you. He found me. And yet the gentleman who is looking to buy a costly pearl is still looking at others bringing pearls from the sea. But you and I, we are safely now in this little man's hut as he is now cracking open the shell. And as he pulled us out, we were reluctant to go. We are always reluctant to change. That is radical, that was taking place right now. How dare he put his knife close to me? But yet he was only cleansing us up and scraping away the muck and the mire. And eventually he took us out, and he gently walked us over to a pan of water, and he rinsed us down. And we've all are going through a rinsing right now as we, ATS is rinsing us down, scraping away the fallacies that we once held, scraping away, as we heard from other speakers this morning, that told us not to linger in the past, not to linger with this past. Don't let it determine your future. Going through a rinsing, a wonderful cleansing, rinsing. And here we go. He walks out on the beach. And here comes a man, that same man we mentioned earlier, that was searching for a good pearl, a goodly pearl. And finally, the pearl diver showed him the pearls in his scathed hands. His hands were blistered and bruised and had calluses. And the gentleman looked and he says, "Oh my God, look at this pearl." But the good book tells us that he went and he sold all he had, because he ran his hands in his pockets and he said, I can't afford. I have to go get more money. And I believe that after we are finished with the ATS, after Antonio has done his best to cleanse us up, after we've helped cleanse each other up, the man on the beach is no more than the marketplace. The marketplace will be proud and happy to deal with those of us that came out of this place called the ATS, this place where people have said you will never accomplish anything, this place that was so deeply embedded in the muck and mire. You and I, like myself, you, like others, the beautiful part about this journey education during radical times. Education in radical times. There are points that are to be made further as we explore and get ready to embrace the full impact of what we are really involved with. We are involved in a radical, explosive change right now. This is the future. We're living in the future right now. And I can see that gentleman when he came back after selling all that he had, and he could thank that Pearl Diver. He could thank Antonio. I think one day the world will thank Antonio. I think one day the world will thank him the way they have thanked the men who started schools such as Carnegie and Yale. Those men have they have their place in history. And I believe, as I think about what's happening here with the ATS and Riqueza, it will be thanked one day as time fulfills itself, as always. When we look in hindsight, I already can see in hindsight the uniqueness of this platform. So I think we have some time left. If there are any questions, I would like to give the opportunity for questions or thoughts for anyone that would like to chime in. Thank you very much. I'm Vastine East.
Thank you, Vastine. Yes, we do still have a little bit of time. If there's anyone that has a particular question that they wanted to ask, you know, I find it the topic of change myself to be particularly stimulating. And what I gathered from what you were saying, change is really the only thing that seems to remain consistent, if that makes any sense whatsoever. And I like the way that you referred to it as radical exposure to change today, because I think that's truly what we're seeing. I know for sure more so than I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. Although change is always consistently with us, and wherever, you know, if you're aware of it, if you're trying to be aware of it, it's something that you can always find within our existence. One question, you know, what do you do as you go through your life? Is there something in particular, a routine that you use, or a special thing? I know, you know, you look at sports players, baseball players and football and basketball. If you speak with any of them, almost all of them have some particular routine that they go through right before they're going into a big game. And of course, our big game is our life. It's what we're dealing with every single moment. But is there something in particular that you would like to share that you do to, as you would say, keep yourself rinsed off as the pearl that you are? Is there anything that you could share with us specifically?
Yes, I would like to thank you very much, Gary, for that question. As we hear all the time here at the ATS, we must inspire ourselves. And it's not a fear, it is an acknowledgement of my past. And I say this in respect, I personally hate poverty. I do not hate the people, I hate poverty. And the reason why I say that is because I really believe, and I see it so much, too many have come to love poverty because it's a safety zone, in a sense, for a lot of people. And I realize that once we learn to dislike it or put it in a place of no respect, you should not respect poverty. because oftentimes poverty is imposed upon us by some other force. So if I accept poverty as a way of life, as a norm, then I have applauded the person who has put me there. I have applauded the conditions that put me there. But that's what inspires me, is just to keep going. I have to, and out of respect for those many people who have sacrificed for me, I am a blessed man. I'm not a Fortune 500 man, but I feel that my soul is rich, and I'm grateful for that, Gary. But that's what keeps me inspired. Just knowing that life is so short, and besides being short, it's uncertain. And I try to do my best every time I go out. That's it. Yes.
Well, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head in a lot of different ways. And of course, we talk about this a lot through ATS University, and how we really do create what's in front of us by what we focus on and the words that we choose and the thoughts that we choose to entertain. Certainly a lot of us, through conditioning, we've programmed ourselves, or we've been programmed to slip into the area of self-doubt and talk that limits us. And I've felt very strongly that the key to escaping that is education. And I know you come from a very technical background with your engineering background, and just myself personally, I'm kind of curious, because you very, very succinctly described what you saw happen within your industry, going from the 30 tables, the 30 drafting tables, to where we are today, where one person is doing maybe more work than 20 people. Mm-hmm. And it's intriguing to me. I have a personal friend who does some of that type of work, and he's an older gentleman now and seen a lot of this. But you know what interested me with him was he had a major catastrophic event in his life when we were younger. And David Godfrey is a very dear friend of mine, still lives in the country in central Ohio. And his whole thing growing up was motorcycles. Mm-hmm. And no one taught him. He taught himself by tearing down bikes and rebuilding them, right? And he just had a passion for it. It was something that was within his spirit, obviously. And mm-hmm. of course, as some of us were when we were younger, he was a little bit on the crazy side of that kind of thing. And he would build bikes that would just go faster than anybody else. And he loved to do the dirt track racing, the motocross, mm-hmm. which is, if anybody's watched that, I mean, it is one of the most dangerous sports. And one day, I mean, he was tracking in the top three in the state of Ohio in these events. And one day he missed a jump just a little bit, came down bad and crashed his bike. And he told me many, many months later, because he ended up in a coma that day, he says, you know, the initial accident, he said, I remember hitting the ground and looking up, and I didn't feel like I had really hurt myself. But what he looked up to see was this motorcycle coming down on top of him. And mm-hmm. it was one after another. But he managed to come back from that. And that's the thing that always is remarkable to me, the human spirit. Even when you've literally got, pardon my French, but the snot just knocked out of you, to the point where he was for 6 months in a coma. They didn't know if he was going to come out. He was busted up. He had broken his back and his neck in multiple places. And I remember when he came out of that, he seemed to be a totally different person. And I know that's kind of what we all do when we go through something traumatic. If we manage to make it to the other side in one piece, we mm-hmm. come out a different person. And I watched this happen with my friend David. The interesting thing was, is that he still had all of that knowledge. Now, he didn't go back to racing motocross. I'll tell you that. He stopped mm-hmm. that. But he used that knowledge to literally kickstart a career. And I hadn't spoken with him for years. And when we finally got back in communication, he says, you know, I'm so excited with what I've been able to do with my life. I was able to take that. And he was very big into some of the teachings that we, you know, that we talk about. And he said, I just feel so good that the Lord shined on me enough to let me know that my life wasn't over, that I still had things to do. I said, well, what do you do now? He says, I'm an engineer. He says, I went back to school. I got a little mm-hmm. bit of training. I said, what kind of things do you engineer? He says, I engineer machines that mm-hmm. do things for people. And at the time, and I think he's shifted a little now, but at the time he was building, I thought this was so intriguing, machines that would fold, would create and fold a box to a particular size and shape. And you know, you don't think about that, that people have to engineer those kinds of things. And he literally would take it from the thought process to being able to manufacture machines that would do the work that men used to do, mm-hmm. and very, you know, very technical work, very closely judged work. So, and that's a long intro into a question, isn't it? But the question is, what do you see the future of that industry of engineering? And I mean, are we looking at artificial intelligence doing these things, or are we still going to have human interaction?
Yes, we'll always have human, you know, involved in it, but technology is moving so rapidly. Artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, it's mind-boggling when we think about we're actually in a fight for survival right now. I believe this country, for instance, is so technologically advanced. You could virtually build an interstate highway now with a third of the people that it generally took to build. When you think about farming, for instance, farms used to have hundreds of workers, where now they can aerate properties, acreages, thousands of acres with one man virtually sitting in a control room, utilizing mechanical watering systems. Automobiles virtually can build themselves now because they're duplicated. Everything is so perfectly mechanized now. But where do I really see it heading? I think all of the leading politicians, I love to listen to them talk. And every one of these people, many of them who are on both sides of the aisle, liberal or conservative, all of stressing and talking about overpopulation. And that troubles me, because what they're telling me in their subliminal way of talking is that they really don't need that many people anymore. So those who will actually survive in this new world economy will have to be the cream of the crop. That's the only way I can put it. Whatever we do, we have to be the best now, because the world just simply doesn't need a lot of people to do the labor anymore. And that's what technology is doing. It is trying to its best to get rid of Rob and Joe. Again, they don't have to pay health insurance to Rob and Joe as a computer, as a robot. And if he gets sick, he's never sick very long. You just replace a part. And I think this, even the airline industry, I mean, they're pushing now to have airplanes, commercial airliners in the future, fly without pilots, to eliminate even the need for those highly skilled. And I don't want to be on a plane without a pilot, but there are thinkers who are putting this to work now. So yes, this is why I applaud what's happening with the ATS, is because we may not be large in number, but you're talking about survival. We all want to live, and the system really doesn't care anymore. It cares only about a certain element of it. It preserves itself now. But as far as the Robs and the Joes, and that's my group I came out of, we have to learn to become more innovative and more creative and to follow sound teaching. And I think this is what's happening here at the ATS, is sound.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The Robs and the Joes are something that that we all need to consider within our own lives, as far as looking at the future. You know, the future of education is changing before our eyes, and it's a thrill for me with ATS Junior Business University, Riqueza Bureau of Dominant Speakers. It's just a thrill to be able to see and to be a part of some of this change in a positive direction. Mm-hmm. And as you talked about being in alignment with that change, slackers beware, right, in the future, because you're exactly right. I mean, I've seen reports, people that have written things, and, you know, people that we consider world leaders, where they literally discuss, and it's very disconcerting, literally discuss that there's too many humans, mm-hmm, that they have to deal with on this planet. And that's that is a little disheartening, that there are those that have gotten into positions of power that can think this way. But that's a fact. And now with education, and you know, not all of us are college educated. Some of us are college educated, and we have the six figure loan debt to show it off. And sometimes that's all we have. What do you think is the future of education?
Well, not being an educated educator, my wife is in education, but we are all educators. The future that I see, and this comes from the very core nature of higher education in this country, we will always have the major universities, the Purdue's, the Yale's, the Carnegie's, all these major universities, they will be here. First of all, those schools are paid for by wealthy men and women. They'll never go broke. I think about Texas A&M, the University of Texas, they'll never go broke, you know, unless oil stops pumping in the ground here in Texas. Those schools are solid. But for the schools that rely on fundings from the government, schools that are relying on its alumni to continue to finance it, I think those schools are in jeopardy. They're in trouble. And it's not that they're bad schools. I think they're great schools. But again, it's who do you need anymore? And that's the horror that goes to bed with many people at night. Do you need me anymore? Our military now, only active military, is only 1.3 million people now. 1.3. With China, it's like four times more than that, I think. So it tells me that even the military doesn't need a lot of people, because it's relying on this technology to take the place of footmen, airmen, sailors. It's a numbers thing based on technology. That's the advantage you have when you have high technology, I think. Nut, peanut most, in the jail.
Most certainly. And you know, even the face of war, I believe, is changing before our eyes. And we may be in the midst of some of that, and we don't even realize it.
Yes, Bill Gates said it best a few weeks ago. He said, the wars of the future will be biological. And he said, we may not see great armies on the fields anymore, but it will be basically what we may have witnessed here this year. I don't know. You know, I'm not into that. But who knows?
Who knows?
But either way, an uneducated society is dangerous. And I think national defense should, the Department of Defense should embrace education, its people to learn. Because unhappy people do unhappy things. And
that's truth. That is truth. Well, you know, right now, and we're getting close to the end of our time with Vastine. If there's anyone else that has any questions, please drop them in the chat here as we proceed to wrap up a little bit. I did want, you know, with this discussion on education in particular, I wanted to reiterate for those folks that maybe have just joined us, or maybe your guest of someone here today, and please reach out to that person after our webinars this weekend and thank them and let them know how much and what you got out of the time that you spent with us. We have four major goals that have been presented to us that we use as our flag to follow. And Antonio Smith has been such a great leader in this respect. And, you know, for some folks, the big lofty goals or big audacious goals, as they say, when you're first getting started and trying to develop your path, that can be a difficult thing. That can be a really tough thing. And you want to think in terms of what do I need now? Or what am I going to need next month? And you know, we're taught constantly, and I think it's good to reiterate this kind of thing, that, you know, you need to refresh yourself on these things every day. And again, you know, as Serena was saying, that her dad, she heard for years, shoot for the stars. And if you hit the moon, you did okay, right? But I wanted to reiterate our four major goals at this time. And these are more than goals. I guarantee you, these are things that we're going to be able to make each other happen. And a big part of it is this organization and the people and working together. Because, you know, the number one rule is nobody's in this alone. We are all in this together. And there have been times I've forgot that rule myself. And then, you know, I'll mention something to Deanna or to Grace or to Antonio, and they'll go, well, why didn't you just say something sooner? You know, why didn't you ask this question? Or, well, you know, I'm trying to deal with it on my own. I don't want to put my stuff off on anybody else. But no, we all are in this together, and we need to remember that. And number two is don't jump off the plane. And, you know, I took private pilot ground school as a kid in my high school, and I never really took it to the max. I didn't get my license or anything. But, you know, that's the very first rule that they teach you in private pilot ground school is never jump out of a perfectly good airplane. Right. Never. There's never a time when that is the right thing to do. But right now we have four things majorly that we're working on. One is to create 100,000 millionaires. And many of the people on this call, on this webinar this weekend, I know are going to be in that rank with us to create 100,000 millionaires. Why? Because if we have 100,000 millionaires, we can make some change on the planet. We can really do some things. The next one is to make the least among us the greatest salesperson. Make the least among us the greatest salesperson. And we don't take these things lightly. And that's why I'm here to help. Deanna's here to help. Antonio, If you have any issues whatsoever, you just need to bring them to us. And if you have a problem making a call, if you have a problem dealing with a particular person, you just don't think you've quite got it down, come to someone, come to your team leader, come to one of us, and we'll literally make the call for you. We will literally walk you through this entire process. Number three, and of course, this comes out of Antonio's past. And, you know, it's just, when I first met Antonio, to me, it's just almost overwhelming to hear his story and his story of going from literally being a child living in a trash can to running multi-million dollar technological companies. So number three is really close to my heart. I have a special place in my heart, especially for children, but that is to end world hunger. And again, that's a lofty goal. But you know what? If we have 100,000 millionaires, there's probably going to be 20,000 billionaires in that group. And you guarantee that we can make some effect on that. We can, if we band together as a group economy and work together, we can most certainly end world hunger. And that's a lofty one. But man, what a refreshing thing just to even talk about, right? And then the last is probably the main reason ATS Business University is here, and that is to end the student debt crisis, to stop student debt. And you can do that right here. You can get, you know, a master's in business, the equivalent of really a PhD in a lot of these areas, if you pay attention and you diligently do your studies with ATS. And that's something, I mean, I see people who in my life who have hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, of student loan debt, and they're not even working within the industry that they have all their paper on the wall for and trying to figure out how they're going to pay off that debt. Well, with ATS University, be assured, you come in here, you can get the information, you can get the education, you can get the folks to back you up and to support you to where you get everything you need. And when you walk away and go on with your life, you don't have that massive debt hanging over your head. And that can just be stifling. I know it can. I've been there myself, and I've struggled it at times to get beyond that alone. And when you're in that position, nothing else can really seem to matter. So I wanted to thank you so much, Vastine. I'm a huge fan of everything that you do. I just love your outlook and how you're able to put things into a frame and a picture that, for me anyway, just seems to go right to my heart, make so much sense. Did you have any closing words that you would like to impart with us as we move along in the Dominate Conference 2020?
No, I would just like to say that I've enjoyed being here this morning, waking up this morning. I didn't sleep much last night thinking about today, but I'm honored to be here. And I think I talk better sometimes when I'm very relaxed today, but I'm just overjoyed because I know the immense responsibility that's on everyone's shoulder here this weekend. And quick answers are not good sometimes. It's good to think about something you've heard in the form of a question, because people are listening, people's hearts are here. And I try to be as sincere as I possibly can be when I talk to people. I want to be as transparent, but I've enjoyed it, and I'll continue to sit here and relish and learn more for the rest of this day and all day tomorrow. And I can't wait to hear the other speakers, the other thoughts, and I'm grateful for what I've heard already. I'm blessed. I love you all. Thank you. Ooh.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.